Coming up in this episode. So it seems like part of this is simply like an effort to feel less alone.
It was not an easy moment to face, and especially not an easy moment to face again and again and again.
Geographic, family dynamics, but especially the traumas in their lives. And that's why I called it a surprisingly good read.
This podcast from Georgia Public Broadcasting highlights books with Georgia connections, hosted by two of your favorite public radio book nerds who also happen to be your hosts of All Things Considered on GPB Radio. I'm Peter Biello.
And I'm Orlando Montoya. Thanks for joining us as we introduce you to authors, their writings, and the insights behind their stories, mixed with our own thoughts and ideas on just what gives these works the narrative edge. Peter, it should come as no surprise that I'm kind of a literary tourist.
Really?
Like when I go on vacation, I'll make a point of, you know, finding like the house where a writer worked or they were inspired.
Mm-hmm. So do you choose the location of your vacation based on
No,
writers?
Never. But it just sort of like when I'm there, I'll find something there. But how far would you travel to find like the typewriter where someone worked or something like that?
I would say like I'm kind of like you. Like if I'm already in a place, I'll seek out something cool and literary about it. Like my first trip to Savannah, I went to the Flannery O'Connor House. And just over the course of my reporting, when I was in New Hampshire, I had a chance to go to the Robert Frost House in Franconia. But I'm not flying to the Florida Keys, for example, to see anything Hemingway related, for example. Or I love Kazuo Ishiguro, but I'm not going to England to check his digs
out. Well, I visited England to see the house of Conrad Aiken.
That surprises me not at all.
But I've also been to the homes of Marjorie Kennan Rawlings, Carl Sandburg, and others. But talking about this today, because the book today, the writer not only took four trips to England to learn all she could about her fascination, Virginia Woolf.
Oh, okay. So this is a Virginia Woolf day.
It's Virginia Woolf. We're right. Talking about 288 pages. It's part memoir and part Virginia Woolf. It's called In the Rhododendrons, and it's subtitled A Memoir with Appearances by Virginia Woolf. And so I'll explain that later. But it's a surprisingly good read.
I'm getting a sense that this person was not alive at the same time as Virginia Woolf, right?
No, no.
So her appearances are somewhat ghostly? I don't know. What do you think?
It's a memoir told through the lens of Virginia's writing and life.
Oh, okay.
So she's inspired by Virginia Woolf in much the same way that I'm inspired by Conrad Aiken. And I can kind of see aspects of my life that relate to Conrad Aiken. She took this with Virginia Woolf and she said, you know, these are aspects of Virginia Woolf's life that are like mine. And let me go back into my own personal history and write a memoir about it.
Okay. So is she like looking at her own life through the text Orlando or Mrs. Dalloway or To the Lighthouse, something like that?
All of those things and Virginia's biography. What do you know about Virginia's biography, if anything, or her work?
Well, I years and years ago, I read Mrs. Dalloway. So my memory of it is quite fuzzy, and I do know she died by suicide. But apart from that, I don't know too much about her.
Yes, so a lot of people know that she died by suicide in 1941. Other books of hers include A Room of One's Own, and she's probably one of the most influential writers of the early 20th century. We're talking about the Bloomsbury Group back in the early part of the 20th century. But like I said, it's mostly not about Woolf. It's about the author, mm-hmm. Heather Crystal, using Woolf to understand issues in her own life, sort of cultural, geographic, family dynamics, but especially the traumas in their lives. And that's why I called it a surprisingly good read.
Okay, I'm very interested in learning more, but tell me a little bit about what surprised you about this.
Well, I wanted to read the book, first of all, because I wanted to see how someone could write a memoir with appearances by another writer. But the first few chapters were kind of tough. I gotta be honest with you. And at first I thought, oh my goodness, am I making a mistake in picking this book?
Tough how?
Because she starts off very hard, very quickly with her traumas, and talking specifically about a sexual assault that she experienced when she was 14 years old. I'm talking about Heather Crystal and her mother-daughter relationship, which was complicated. And at the very first, it was kind of hard to see where we were going with all of this information or how it relates to Wolf. But as we go along through the chapters and you get more and more into it, we kind of untangle the things about Wolf and Crystal together. And I think that that untangling kind of becomes the mastery of this book. And now I'm very glad that I wrote it, because I think it's a mastery. It's like being presented with cotton candy and being told, you know, unspin this.
Wow. Okay. So is sexual assault a thing that Crystal and Wolf have in common?
Yes.
Oof. All right.
So and suicidal ideation as well. But perhaps I should start with something fun. Here's a fact for you to understand about Crystal, and you have to understand before reading a book. Crystal was born to British parents. She grew up in New Hampshire. She's American.
Okay.
But she has English parents, and I asked her if her English heritage left any lasting marks on her.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. To this day, I still pronounce my T's with a kind of absurd specificity. But when I listen to recordings of myself as a child, the enunciation is just off the charts. And then also, you know, table manners were a big factor. There's a different way that you're supposed to hold your knife and fork. And then there were things like we were not allowed to chew gum because that was considered a pretty disgusting American habit.
So if overpronouncing T's and not chewing gum makes someone English, I think I might have a little English in me.
Well, having no table manners certainly makes you American. At least that's something I learned when I was in Europe studying in France. But how close was she to the English side of her family?
She was very close. Many visits during her childhood back to England to connect with her grandparents, her parents' siblings and cousins. But it was a 2019 visit to London that inspired her to connect her life with Wolf's life. It happened at Kew Gardens in London, near where the family lived. And Kew Gardens really becomes the inspiration for the book in many ways.
It's such a rich site. It leads to so many different kinds of learning. For me, it led to thinking about the personal family history, all of the birthdays that were celebrated there. It led me to thinking about the appearance of Kew Gardens in Wolf's novels and short stories, but also in her diaries and her letters. It shows up as a, you know, biographical site.
So the Kew Gardens is in this book from the beginning to the end. I kind of feel like I've gotten a tour of Kew Gardens, every little hilltop, every little daisy. But, you know, that's part of the shared culture and geography of Wolf and Crystal's life. But as I mentioned, they go much deeper.
Okay. So you mentioned that there's a huge trauma at the beginning of this book, part of the focus of the memoir. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Like, I know some readers might want to know, too, like, is it super graphic?
It's not super graphic. I think what's happening here, she wants to understand what happened to her when she was 14 years old in the year 1995, and she was sexually assaulted in an alleyway in London. She went to a nightclub, intoxication. I won't get into it here, but she wants to understand what happened to her there because she honestly doesn't remember. She also wants to understand her relationship with her mother, which is strained. She was reserved. And she doesn't understand a lot of these things about her family and about herself. So she goes back to the places where it happened, and she talks with her family members. And so it's sort of an unraveling of her trying to get to the bottom of what happened to her. And it was not easy. One of the things that moves this book along is going along with Crystal as she gets to those painful truths.
I'm thankful that it's done. It was not easy. It was not an easy moment to face, and especially not an easy moment to face again and again and again. This book went through many drafts, and so it required me to turn back to some of the difficult moments of my life again and again. But it also gave me occasion to return to the site of the assault itself, to touch the brick wall that I remember my back against, and to be there as an adult, not as a 14-year-old. someone who had walked there purposefully and with the company of Wolf and all of the learning that I had done in the meantime.
Can you even imagine doing something like that?
I've heard similar stories of people going back to the site of trauma, kind of as a way to heal, as a way to sort of take back some of the control of the memory of the place, that kind of thing. Incredible strength to be able to do that, too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm drawn to this type of storytelling because we all have traumas to unpack. Mm-hmm. I've mentioned a few of them here, growing up with depression, lack of friends. I was not very close to my family in a lot of ways. And so sometimes I think, you know, could I go back to my college, my university, University of Central Florida in Orlando, and sort of face the places where some of these things happened? I would like to go do that. And I think Crystal kind of gives me kind of the bravery to kind of think that I might be able to do that. And I asked her, you know, what gave her the bravery and the strength to go through this?
I would love to know for certain the answer to that question. I think that there is something in me that when I am working on a book, whether it's poetry or nonfiction, I become connected to a power within myself that I do not know how to access otherwise. And so it really was art that was asking the questions. The art required it. The art gave me that, it gave me that bravery.
So it seems like she's saying that writing the book gave her the strength, not necessarily visiting the place where it happened.
Exactly. You don't go to a place and then magically be healed. You've got to process it and, you know, go through it with writing. And, you know, like I said, maybe that could be a lesson for me. How about a memoir of Orlando Montoya accompanied by Conrad Aiken? He struggled with suicide as well. He was a very serious person. And I've written actually before about some of my similarities with Aiken. But this was a fantastic way of doing a memoir because it's not just her and her business. It's also going through Virginia Woolf's business as well and learning about Virginia Woolf, which I didn't know too much about either. I was like you. I started out not knowing a lot about Virginia Woolf, but now I feel like I know more about her.
How would you go about structuring your memoir were you to write them with Conrad Aiken in mind?
Well, we can start with some of Conrad Aiken's personality similarities with my own. And then I would do what Crystal did and sort of go back to places in Orlando, Florida, where some of the traumatic experiences of my life happened and kind of, and the great thing about Aiken too is he's a poet. So you can find different things in his poetry and in his writing, in his short stories, in his novels to help you understand what you're going through.
So it seems like part of this is simply like an effort to feel less alone in a way, right? Like, am I reading this correctly? Like, it seems like she's trying to find some kind of kinship with Virginia Woolf so that someone understands, even if that someone is alive many, many decades ago.
I like that interpretation, and I like what she said in the bite that we just played a while ago, that she had to go through these things accompanied by someone, and the person who accompanied her on her journey was Virginia Woolf.
I see. Well, quite a bit of literary tourism, it seems. Extreme tourism here.
Yeah, that was some extreme literary tourism, and I would say an extreme example of her literary tourism was breaking into the grounds. And she makes a point that she did not break into the house. She broke into the grounds of a historic house in England.
Oh, wait. Okay.
That was connected to Woolf because she wanted to be as close as possible to a particular scene in one of Woolf's books.
Woolf's novel, Orlando, ends on a fictionalized version of Knoll House, which is the estate that we broke into at night. And it ends at the stroke of midnight on October 11th, 1928. And so as I was working on this book, as I was researching, getting more and more obsessed with Woolf and kind of figuring out how can I get all the way inside her books, it occurred to me that I could go and be there at midnight. I could be inside the last page of that book And once I had the idea, it just became really irresistible. And I was fortunate enough to find misbehaving friends who would come with me.
And this is another thing that propelled the book along, because she introduced this idea kind of halfway into the book. And it's like, once she introduces this idea, you're like, is she really going to do it?
Huh, okay.
Is she really going to break into the grounds of a National Trust house in England?
I was going to say, that sounds like burying the lead here. Like, this is the exciting part here. The will she, won't she break the law, and what will happen if she does? And so she says she went with friends. Her friends were helping her do this?
A few friends. And, you know, I think houses of literary masters might need more security cameras.
So was she caught?
No.
Little bit of a spoiler. She wasn't caught. She got away with it.
She did. She did. And I do want to say also that Orlando, the novel, I had, believe it or not, no idea what that book was about until I read this book. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know what? I should probably find out what that story is all about. So I watched the movie Orlando, and I finally know what the story Orlando is about.
So your parents weren't Virginia Woolf fans. No, they named you after the city.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Just to be clear.
They named me after a city and an ancestor.
Would you rather have been named after the Virginia Woolf book?
I think the Virginia Woolf book would have been very complicated. I'm just glad to finally know what that book is all about and to learn more about Virginia Woolf and Heather Crystal.
Well, this seems fascinating. I think I want to put this on my to-read list. The book is In the Rhododendrons by Heather Crystal. Orlando, thanks so much for telling me about it.
Thank you.
Or should I say Orlando Dalloway Montoya. Thank you very much for telling me about this.
I'll just keep on living. I'll just keep on living like Orlando does in the book.
Please do. Please do.
Thanks for listening to Narrative Edge. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a brand new episode. This podcast is a production of Georgia Public Broadcasting. Find us online at gpb.org/narrativeedge.
You can also catch us on the daily GPB News podcast, Georgia Today, for a concise update on the latest news in Georgia. For more on that and all of our podcasts, go to gpb.org/podcasts.